This is Raul Lopez, and you're listening to How Do You Say Success in Spanglish? The path to success isn't easy. For minorities and people of color, many attempt this journey with little to no guidance. Join me as I sit down with individuals who share their stories of perseverance so that together we can learn how to say success in Spanglish. What's good, mi gente? Welcome back. It's your boy, Raul. Thank you for joining me here on How Do You Say Success in Spanglish. Today, I have a very special guest, Brittany Simpson. Brittany, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good, good, good. Brittany holds a place dear in my heart because she coaches my daughter in soccer, but she also has an amazing story. So just to kind of give a little intro on Brittany, Brittany Simpson was born and raised in Sunrise, Florida. She's been playing soccer since the age of three and also attended an academic and athletic high school where she played varsity all 4 years, as well as being part of various honor societies. She committed to the Yale's D1 soccer program after her sophomore year. During college, she played on the Yale's women's soccer team for all 4 years while majoring in chemistry. Captain her senior year, she continued to play after graduating in England for over 2 years. She also played on the youth national teams and finally with the Jamaican national first team, qualifying for the 2019 Women's World Cup. Currently, she coaches girls 2013 U soccer, which includes my daughter, as well as the Women's United, the United Women's Soccer Team as well. When not doing soccer, she's just a senior scientist at Pfizer. So how's it going, Brittany?
Not too bad. Thanks for having me. Very, very excited.
Yeah. Thank you so much for taking the time. I mean, from the moment we, this is my first year doing this level of soccer with my daughter. She's fairly new to soccer. She's only been playing for a couple of years. And when we found out you had a coach, I was like, oh my God, this is such an amazing person. I'm glad to have, that my daughter has this person as a role model. So thank you, you know, for helping her out with everything.
Oh, of course. She's lovely. I love that team so much. They're always super excited to show up for practices, games. They want more practices, things like that. I just love to see, especially at a young age. So I'm excited.
Well, I guess to start off, you know, tell me a little about yourself. You know, who is Brittany Simpson?
Sure. Yeah. Thanks so much for the great intro as well. That was great. but yeah, just like you heard, I'm born and raised in Sunrise, Florida. Lived there for a majority of my life. I have one older brother, so we both played soccer from starting at age three. I actually played on a boys team until I turned around 10 or 11. Then I switched over to a girls team. I always like to joke around and say that like I was born on a soccer field because my dad also played soccer as well as professionally. So my parents, thankfully, and I'm very blessed to say that like I played every sport just to try out, see what I was good at. But, you know, secretly, we always knew it was going to probably be soccer. But if I wasn't, you know, at school or at my own games, I was at my brother's games. And if we didn't have either of those, I'm at the field practicing with my brother and my dad. So soccer was definitely a big, you know, part of my life, especially being Jamaican as well. A lot of my cousins, my uncles, all of them played soccer as well. So just all the way around that. But the other side of me, like you heard, I'm a scientist at Pfizer. So my mom was very big on academics. So they were like, okay, you can play soccer. That's great. But you know, you also have to excel in the classroom. So growing up, I was at a private Catholic school my entire life through college. And I did very hard, rigorous academics as well as, you know, sports. So majored in chemistry. Came straight from freshman year of college. Within high school, I knew I wanted to do chemistry from, I think, sophomore year. I had a really, really great chemistry teacher. She was very energetic. She just made chemistry really, really fun. So that kind of sparked my idea of, okay, I'm pretty good at this. Maybe this could going to work out. What kind of, you know, profession I can get out of this? So that kind of got me thinking going into college of like, okay, what kind of specific kind of chemistry I want to do and how do I get to where I want to be? So did that through college. After my sophomore year of high school, actually, I committed to Yale for soccer. It was seems kind of early, and it is early. making that decision definitely came from, you know, my older brother who played soccer at Penn State, and my parents were, you know, huge, huge help with that. I was looking at different schools, you know, different levels of soccer, but I also knew I wanted to do really well in academics. So why not do that in an Ivy, you know, do D1 while also doing that. Not the easiest task to do, but let's see if I could try, you know. And that was my parents' biggest thing. They're like, always aim high and, you know, see where you land from there. They always wanted the best for us. So they sacrificed a lot for us to go do what we needed to do. So I committed there. Ended up playing all 4 years, captained my last year at Yale, which was amazing. Loved that team. And majored in chemistry. So with that, I actually had an internship at Pfizer. And that kind of directed me of, okay, I know I want to do pharmaceuticals. How do I get there? You know, what things that I need to do? Then I took that internship, learned a lot, came back to school, learned a lot about research and, you know, things I can kind of excel in and better my own skills. And after that, I knew I wanted to do post-school, like work, graduate work, whether it's PhD, master's, et cetera, et cetera. So I have that one side of, you know, being so driven in chemistry and wanted to be the best at that. But I also really love soccer, you know, so I'm going to continue both. People always ask me, like, you know, that's hard. How do you do that? Especially at an Ivy, and chemistry alone is like the craziest thing. Yeah. And it is. I take that. But, you know, like I said, when I was in middle school, I was always doing two things. I was always doing school and I was always doing sports. And I did that through high school and I did that through college. So even though, yes, the level intensifies, it was still kind of the same thing for me. I always knew that, like, this is just my life. I thought this was normal. You know, I didn't compare it to anything else. This is just what I knew. I was very structured. You know, I had this 10 minutes to eat my dinner and then I had to do my homework and then I had practice or, you know, things like that. It just seemed very normal to me. And like I said, I think that started from young age with my parents just being like, okay, if this is what you want to do, let's do it well. Like, let's, you know, put you in the best spot, work very, very hard to get you to, you know, where you want to be. So did all of that, played while I was getting my master's over in England. Again, kind of crazy now that I think about it. And then, like you mentioned, I played on youth teams, youth national teams, played with the Jamaican team, and ended up getting a job at Pfizer. And hard to turn that down. So, of course, moved back over, and now I'm a scientist there. But still have the love for soccer, of course. So even though I'm not playing professionally anymore, I wanted to be involved as much as possible. So, you know, teaching your daughter and the rest of the girls on the team is the most fun thing for me, honestly. And teaching the college girls when they come back out of college during the summer, again, you know, different kind of level, different kind of spot for me, whether being, you know, a player versus a coach now, but definitely very, very fulfilling. So very, very happy about that.
Nice. It's a lot to be like to accomplish, and it's, I can imagine that drill. I mean, when I was growing up as a kid, my dad was very strict for college. College was right. Everything. The only reason he let me play sports, well, he was a soccer guy too. So, but I won't go into like why I stopped being soccer. It was 8 years different. You know, I sat on the bench a lot because I was a big chubby guy. So they didn't let me play. So, yeah. So it drew me away from soccer. I didn't like playing soccer because nobody ever let me play. So. Right. Eventually, you know, when I get to high school, you know, I'm playing sports and my dad was like, you know, everything I had to do was for college. So I'm going to play football because that's going to help me, could help me for college and stuff like that. So that balance, was that something you learned early on because your parents were guiding you on all that stuff? Or in like, did they say you could only play soccer after you finish your homework? You know, you could only, or did you have limits on that from your parents?
You know, I don't think we had particular limits on like, you know, you have to do this before this, or, you know, you have this time to do this. I think it's because I always joke that my mom was very heavy on academics and my dad was heavy on soccer. So I just had one full percent on the other and then 100% on the other. But we had this very structured schedule in a sense of like, you know, I have this 30-minute block. This is the only time I have to do my homework. It's going to get done in this 30-minute block. Because I just don't have the time to do any other things. And it's interesting because it's nothing I never, you know, it's not like, oh, you got to go do your homework. Like I was always excited to do my homework. Like I just want to go and do it, you know? And it was like, okay, I can do this. I know I have practice later, so I don't need to, you know, sacrifice this because I want to do something else. Like I could just get it done and then move on to the next thing. And I, like I said, I don't think that was brought on more so from my parents. I want to say that's more so from my older brother. He is one of the best role models I have in my life. We're 4 years apart, but we're best friends. Like, that's my number one best friend. And he was very, very good at keeping things in order and, you know, placing where his academics and where his sports will be. So I just kind of followed his lead of like, okay, he's doing his homework this time. I'm going to do it with him. And then we can go outside and play some soccer before our practices. So I think a lot of that just kind of came from following what my brother did. Like, he seemed to go well for him. So I was like, okay, I'll do what he's doing and see how that goes. So,
yeah. And so you said you went to an athletic academic school. Is that like a special type of school or something you had to apply to, or does it just happen to be the school you were at was really athletic and academic?
Yeah, it was. So I went to St. Thomas Aquinas in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and it's very heavy on, well, technically it's very heavy on like football for guys, but it's just very, very good at sports in general. So it's an application process. There's no scholarships when it comes to sports necessarily, but there's a lot of academic scholarships. So if you test well going in versus, you know, your grades from middle school and things like that, then you can get in and excel through that. But St. Thomas is a very interesting place. Mm-hmm. I love it with all my heart. It's a Catholic private school as well. So that also kind of helped because I got introduced to so many, you know, different kinds of people. You know, a lot of the kids that came out of there, especially, like I said, for football, they now play in the NFL. Or, you know, a lot of my teammates that I played club soccer with also went to my high school. So it was like, I see them play high school soccer with them, but I also play club soccer with them. So, you know, the team was very good. I think we won states all 4 years of my high school, I believe. And then won national championship somewhere in the middle, I think sophomore, junior year. So then, you know, I still got competitive soccer through that while, you know, Spanish Honor Society, National Honor Society, those kind of things. Cause I needed to be in the AP class in order to get into an Ivy school, you know? So it was just I was very blessed to be in that space, to be able to do all of those things again at the same time.
So you said you committed to Yale in your sophomore year. And does that mean that there was a certain set of requirements that you needed to maintain to continue and go to Yale, or, you know, what was that like?
Yep. Yeah, so for you to be able to commit to colleges that early, it's like a verbal commitment of just like, okay, we both agree that, you know, when it's time, which is, I think, senior year, you do your signing day, I'm committed to you and you're committed to me kind of thing. But like you said, there is requirements. So you still have to get your grade. You got to keep your grades up. You got to test well. I took the ACTs at that time. So you had a certain score you had to make. All of that stuff still, it's like a conditional offer in some senses. I couldn't get a C, you know, things like that. It was just like this, yes, we're committed to each other, but you still got to kind of get yourself together, make sure everything's on track. You can't get in trouble. Well, you know, all of those kinds of things. So that kind of stuff didn't scare me, especially committing so early. Cause it was like, I'm going to get in trouble with my parents if I, you know, get a C or like whatever.
You're, the least of my worries. So.
You know, I was like, this is fine. It's like, don't worry about it. It's crazy because I feel like it gets earlier and earlier for people to commit. But again, it's a verbal commitment. So things can change. Coaches can change. You know, people that you talk to might not be there when you're actually going there. There's a lot of ifs and buts when it comes to committing that early. But, you know, I was pretty easy with picking the school that I wanted to go to because I had very specific things I wanted. I wanted a good school for academics. I wanted a good school for soccer. I knew I didn't want to stay in Florida more so because I can always come home and see my family. And that was about it. Like, that was honestly pretty much it. So it was just, you know, picking that and getting the best offer I could was, you know, help out my parents. I can, you know, that's all I wanted to do. So.
And so, what impact did like club soccer versus high school sports like help in getting you in front of someone from Yale?
Yeah, so I will say that when it comes to committing for soccer wise, that came more so from club soccer than high school. Of course, high school soccer was still great. Like I said, we won state champs and things like that, but I was seen throughout for club. I was on a very interesting club team where it was just us as the team for the entire club. So I was on this team called Magic Jacks when I was younger, and it was run by this man called Dan Borslow, one of the best people I've met in my entire life. And he basically built this team of just excellent players from all across the world. Honestly, like, we had a couple of players that lived in California that played with us. We played with this woman that's, her name's Bunny. She's one of the best players on the Jamaican national team. She played on my club team with us. She came from Jamaica and came and played. We had two players from Sweden. So it was just this hodgepodge of a team of just amazing players. But it helped in a sense of, I was seen all over the world when it comes to, you know, college coaches, national team coaches, because we just played in every tournament there was possible, honestly. And, you know, of course, when you're winning tournaments, you're winning games, you're going to be pulling a lot of, you know, trainers and things like coaches and stuff like that to come see you. So that helped me a lot when it came to just being seen in the soccer world. But for academics wise, like I mentioned before, being in a place where, you know, very strict private school, you're able to do AP classes. You're able to, I did a couple, like I did high school classes when I was in middle school because my brother was going there. So I could go there in the morning with him and then go back to my middle school after. So I was doing my algebra and calculus class while I was in middle school beforehand and stuff like that. So it was just like chaotic, mm-hmm. a little bit chaotic. But, you know, again, I did those things. Like I always wanted to do those things. So I was like, I want to be, you know, at the best school. I know I have to work, being a minority, like a Black woman, I know I have to work two times as hard just to be seen, whether it's in academic, sports, or whatever it has to be. So putting myself in those quote unquote difficult situations was okay with me. Cause I was like, okay, if this is going to help me in the future, I'll do it. Like I'll work hard. That's not gonna turn me away. So.
And yeah. What was kind of like your ultimate motivator? Was it the hopes of becoming, because I know you're balancing the academics and the athletic. Was it, I got to work really hard because I know this is going to help me become a professional soccer player? Is it, I want to work hard because I know I'm going to elevate myself as a person and become more academic and get all this stuff? Like, what was that motivation for you?
I think I thought about this the other day. It's a good question because I think it ultimately comes down to like, if I had those, you know, as a young girl, you always want to be the best. You want to be a professional soccer player. You know, I looked up to Abby Wambach and like, I was like, I want to play with her and things like that. So it's interesting because I personally don't think those were like my driving force. I honestly think I just always wanted to make my parents proud because they always say that, you know, you're really good at this. Like if you just kind of focus on this, you'll be great. So I'm like, you know what? You're right. Let me focus on this and prove to them that like, yes, I can do this. I can, you know, be the best. So every time my mom was very high in academics. She's like, if chemistry is going to be your thing, like, what do you want to do? Like, where do you want to go? And I was like, okay, well, Pfizer's the number one pharmaceutical company in the world. Can I work there? She's like, if you put your, you know, mind and heart into it, you definitely can. So my dad on the other side, he's like, you're good enough to play on national teams. Is that, if that's what you want to do, you have to put your 100% effort. And I was like, you know what, if that's what you think I can do, I want to get there. I want to work as hard as I can to get there. Like I said, I think it's just a base of making both of my parents proud as much as possible. Honestly, what's my driving force? Like I said, I have goals and ideas of what I want to do, but as long as like I prove to them, okay, I'm working so hard, maybe I don't get there. That's just life, but I'm gonna try as hard as I can just to prove to them like, yeah, I can do it. You're right. Like, thank you for trusting me. Thank you for, you know, believing in that I could. So, yeah.
Nice. And then when you finally started going to college, I'm guessing, did you still have to apply regularly or was it more of a, you know, here you go. We got
yeah.
you.
Yeah, you're in. Yeah, you still have to do regular application process. So I did early decision. So real, you basically do the decision, so. yeah, really early decision, honestly. So when you're a senior, you could apply on like early action, I think it's called. And then you're able to get, if you know you're likely to get in, you get a likely letter. This also could probably be different, you know, for different colleges. This is just Ivies in general. So in like October, I think I got a likely letter of just saying, you know, you're likely to get in, you're like, you're a high prospect, et cetera, et cetera. And then decision time, I think is in January or February, something like that, when you get your acceptance letter and stuff. But it's the same thing, same application process as everybody else. Still got to take the ACT, still got to do all that good stuff. Because with Ivies, they don't give sports scholarship necessarily. So a lot of that had to come from like those scholarships that I got all came from academic. Yes, I was likely to get in because I was committing for soccer, so that you know, that's where I was going. But I still had to, you know, pay for the school. I still had to get in and things like that. And, you know, as much as I love my parents, I got to help them out too, you know? Exactly. So again, that comes with the, you know, I want to focus on academics. And if this is the thing I want to do, let's see, you know, the best way to put myself in the best spot to get there. So,
yeah. And when you, sorry, I'm blanking out for a second, but when you finally got in, you know what I mean? What was that like?
Yep.
Did you, colleges, I don't know what your school demographic was like in Florida, yep. But I know for me, my demographics were like Black and Latino driven. And then I got to college and I was like, there's nobody here that's like me. You know what I mean? We make up like 5% of the school, you know? You know, what was it like for you when you went to Yale, and did soccer kind of help build something for you that made it feel more like at home for you?
Yeah, that's interesting. So like I mentioned before, I went to a Catholic private school growing up, from all the way up until college. So I was very much in more of like a white space growing up, whether, you know, outside of anything else, it was mainly just school. Was like, I was the only Black woman in my middle school until I think sixth grade. And, you know, obviously when you're a child, you don't see those things, you don't notice it as much. But when I got to high school, it was a little bit more diverse, especially with it being like application process and things like that. But still, it was still heavy on white. So going into college, you know, it's especially with Ivies, there's, you know, bits and pieces that are kind of the same. I think demographic wise, my college and my high school are pretty similar. But me being able to be, especially in sports and being on teams and being on different societies in college, I was just immersed with so many different kinds of people and very, very interesting people when it comes to just the way they grew up is very different than mine. Not necessarily in a good or bad way, just very different experiences. And I'm very big on learning from people's experiences because I feel like that could drive you to, you know, being a different kind of person or, you know, just trying something new and completely. I met people start from freshman year of college. I met someone that had done like an internship and did surgery on like a little baby. And I'm like, where did you do that? And he's like, oh, I did it in Turkey. And I was like, I don't even know where Turkey is. Like, what's going on? So I was like, I always say like Yale was such an amazing experience because it just put me in such a space where I had so many different kinds of people from all over the world. And I talked to everybody to understand it. So I think the biggest thing that, well, one, I had a high school teammate and honestly childhood best friend that came to Yale with me. So she played soccer with me as well. So that definitely helped kind of ground me of just like, I'm just a little girl from Florida, like Sunrise, Florida. Like this is, you know, I'm still just me. So that definitely helped a lot. Mm-hmm. But also I think I put a lot of emphasis of just focusing on, you know, the things that I can control. So I knew I wanted to do chemistry. I knew I wanted to do well in soccer. So I just focused on those two things and any like extracurricular stuff. I was, you know, in a painting class, I was on the dance team, et cetera, et cetera. Those are just for fun. But as long as I kind of focus and, you know, have my goal from the start and just try to get there towards the end, that kind of helped just, you know, bring me back to life of like, this is a dream, but see what I could do, you know, while being in there. So,
I mean, yeah. The transition from high school to college from just about everyone is like, oh my God, this is a lot harder than I thought.
Yeah, it's jarring.
Yeah, and to balance that and sports on top of all that, while you're used to the difficulty challenges and you seem to have always challenged yourself extra. Like, what I know I wanted to do chemistry in college as well, and I went to like a very poor school. We didn't have AP chemistry at all, but I did take two levels of chemistry because we did have like block scheduling so I could take extra classes. So it was like my junior year, and I'm in Chem 2, and my teacher walks by and nobody's in class. And she's like, what are you doing here? I'm like, waiting for you to take my class. She's like, you're not a senior? I was like, no, I'm a junior. And so the next 2 weeks I was showing her Photoshop because it was nothing for me to do in my chemistry class. But we didn't have like, you know, when I got to college, I just got railroaded by chemistry, you know, so the challenges were a little bit too much for me. You know, did you feel more overwhelmed and how do we able to balance that for yourself?
Honestly, I didn't feel that overwhelmed, more so because like I mentioned before, we were as kids very structured in a sense of like every time there was something that we were doing, like there was always a purpose. So I didn't mention this before, but I also danced for like 18 years of my life. So not only was I doing school and soccer, I was also dancing. So it was like get up early in the morning, go to my class at high school, come back, go to middle school soccer practice, go to club or club soccer, go to dance, or no, go to dance and then go to club soccer, come home, homework, food, go to sleep. Like that was the day, basically. More things and hours in the day, honestly. So going into college was just a bit of the same, right? It was morning practice, run to class, run to lab, go back to practice, homework, study, essay, whatever it is, sleep, repeat the next day. So yes, it intensified 100% in terms of like level of difficulty, but it was still kind of the same movement, I guess, to me at least. It you know, I had to definitely, Yale is one of those places where it always felt like everybody was there to help each other out, which I really, really appreciated. I didn't feel that at other places that I went to go visit before I committed. So that was a big thing for me, you know, like I want us all to succeed. That's everything I got from. So if I needed help with something, it was very, very easy to approach the professors or approach the TA or something like that. So if, you know, I was falling behind because I was writing my my lab report on the bus back from a game, they are really understanding with that, because they knew we're, you know, we're college athletes. Sometimes it's just impossible to, you know, make a class or make a lab because I have a game or practice or something like that. Definitely challenging, but again, I don't think it changed too much for me because I've been doing it for way too long.
So, I mean, when I took chemistry, I know it's a lot of classes for one class in chemistry. You're doing like your 3-hour classes, you're doing 3 hours of lab, you're doing 2 hours of pre-lab, and then, you know, all this extra stuff. It's like 10 hours a week, and
you're just a whole day.
And that's just the one class, you know. So yeah, I can imagine. So all I'm picturing is you have, like, you know, in Harry Potter with little time turner, like going back in time and getting all your classes.
Basically. Cause like I said, I had lab as well, which is 5 hours or 4 hours, depending on how the lab goes, but it's usually all afternoon. So it was like that. I had to hop on the bus to go to the field to practice right after. Or like I said, we have games on the weekend. So if I have a lab report that's due on Monday, I'm writing my lab report on the drive to the field, play my game on the ride back. People can go out and do whatever they want, but I'm sitting there in the library finishing my lab report. But again, it like stuff like that, I was like, this seems right. Like, this is what I had to do before. So it all adds up for me. And like I said, I had the goal in mind of, I want to be a chemist. Like, I want to do that, but I also, you know, want to be possibly a professional soccer player. So these are my main focus. Everything else, you know, can be for fun or I enjoy it. I will be trying to fit the time in to do it. I did a painting class. I did drawing to kind of ease the struggle with other things. But again, like, I always was just like, you know, these are the things I want to do. If this is a sacrifice I have to make right now, if it is, then, you know, I'm going to benefit later on. So, yeah.
It's a great mindset to have. And it's a great mindset to have with a difficult thing to keep on track, you know what I mean?
Definitely had help along the way from family, friends. Like, it's a hard thing to kind of keep consistent with.
No, and I think the consistency is the key. I mean, I think that's something I tell Eva, my daughter, all the time when it comes to soccer. It's like, don't expect yourself to get from here to here in one day. It's little incremental increases. Like, you just got to keep doing it. You know,
you got to keep doing it. Yeah.
So, well, but
yeah. And that's what I tell the kids too. It's especially when we do technical sessions, I'm like, it might seem tedious because we're doing, you know, touches this entire week, but trust me, from what you guys were doing last week to what we're going to be doing next week, it's going to pay off a lot. Mm-hmm. You might not see it right now because it's small gains, you know, each hour, each day. But when you think about it in a full scheme of things, you're like, oh, it was worth it. Like, I'll do that again, honestly, because it feels so much better in the end. So got to keep that mindset as much as you can, as hard as it can be.
And so then you ended up becoming captain of your team your senior year. How was that? Mm-hmm.
That was amazing. I was blessed to have such great teammates that I'm best friends with till this day. But it was interesting because I had a lot of struggles through college when it came to injuries as well. So my sophomore year, I dislocated and broke my ankle in our first game of the season. So I was out for the season, unfortunately. So that was super, super tough. My parents were there. They saw the whole thing. Oh, no. My brother was watching the game online. He saw the whole thing. It was a mess. And then right before the summer before my senior year, I tore my Achilles. So again, out for the season. So it came to me to be a captain that isn't on the field for, you know, a whole team of girls, which was a difficult thing, of course, from a perspective of like, I want to play pro. I want to do this. Like, this should be my year. This should be like the best year that I can get. But also, I'm now the captain. Like, how am I going to captain a team when I'm not even on the field? So looking back, or even when I was in the moment, to be honest, I kind of sat myself down and I was like, okay, this is the state of the situation. Like, I'm not going to stitch my Achilles back together. Like, how am I going to make this, you know, make the most of this? I go back and forth, but it is a thankful moment of like, yes, that happened, but I learned so, so much from just being, you know, a leader off the field. I had to learn how to be a captain coach. Like, I had to learn how to be that middle bridge between the players and the coaches and try to delegate certain things and, you know, hear their problems, bring it to the coach and try to find a compromise. So all of those lessons, you know, as unfortunate as an injury is, and I know a lot of people, that happens to a lot of people, unfortunately, like, I have to see the good in it because it's like, I'm going to, you know, I can't cry every day. Like, I can't, you know, it's going to bring me down if I think about it the other way. So I'm like, okay, how can I make this, you know, benefit from this as much as possible? So, you know, I did a lot of leadership classes. I did, you know, a lot of different things to see as best as I can, how can I lead this team? It was a different thing, but like I said, I'm grateful for it. And it was one of my favorite seasons just because I had the best class that helped, you know, they were kind of captains. All seven of them were captains for me. We captained the team together, which was a really, really different experience than we've had the past 3 years. So things like that, you know, I try to see at least the benefit out of those kinds of things. Cause, you know, wasn't our best season, but it was still a pretty good season. And I couldn't have done that without any of the people that helped me out, as well as, you know, my coach and trying to figure out, you know, how I can still, you know, being involved as much as possible.
Nice. And so then you ended up going to get your master's and
yep.
You were also playing soccer at the same time. So this was all in England.
Yeah. So, you know, the persistent person that I am, I was like, I'm not going to go out on an injury. Like, that can't happen. So, of course, you know, throughout that year I was doing physical therapy. They told me I usually Achilles is like an 8 months to a year recovery. I was like, I'm going to be 7 months. Like, I'm going to work as hard as I can. So throughout that whole season, I was just working. I played with the team in the spring. I think my recovery process was like the 6 to 7 month mark, and played with the team during the spring. It was definitely hard, you know, trying to get back into the aggression and all of those kinds of things. But I used that to be like, okay, I'm capable of coming back from such a bad injury to play again. So did that, played with the Jamaican team a bit. And then I ended up saying, okay, I might want to do my master's and my PhD in chemistry. Where's the best place where I could do that as well as still play? So my dad is from England. He's from Croydon, England. So South London area. So I have family over there. So I was like, this is perfect. They speak English. Like, this is amazing. And like I said, we were a big soccer family. So we're Chelsea fans. And I was like, London's perfect. Like, let me go over there and go see a couple of Premier League games and all those kinds of stuff. So went over there. I actually went a little bit north. So I went University of Nottingham. I did my master's of research. So strictly lab work, you know, your typical 9 to 5, basically what I do now, typical 9 to 5 kind of thing in lab. But I was like, okay, how can I play as well while I'm here? So played with the school team and also trained with Bristol City, trained with Leicester, played against Aston Villa and things like that for the women's side. So did all of those kinds of things just because I was like, I'm not going to let an injury take me out because my goal is to be a professional soccer player. Like, I want to make it. I want to work as hard as I can to get there. So I did. Like, I really, really wanted to.
And did you just walk up to to a club and say, hey, I'm interested? Or like, how does you? Like,
no.
Like,
yeah. So
is there a LinkedIn for soccer? Like, what's going on?
Honestly, kind of being in the soccer world is an interesting thing because it seems so big, but it actually is kind of small into some ways because everybody just knows each other. And it just so happened that one of the assistant coach for, I believe it was UPenn, University of Pennsylvania, who I played against before and she's seen me play, she happened to be one of the coaches for a London team over in England. And she was like, oh, you're coming. Like, this is the team. You can come play with us or things like that. And then the coach that was at the time, she didn't end up being my coach, but before the school that I went to that I was playing with their team, she's currently the national coach for Northern Ireland. She was the assistant coach for Chelsea women's team. So she also had a lot of connections. So she was like, yeah, send me a highlight tape. I sent her that. I have like a soccer resume. I sent her that and she was like, oh yeah, come play. Like you can come play with us. And did a couple tryouts here and there and stuff like that. So a lot of connections in some ways, but like I said, the soccer world is everybody knows each other. So reach out to my coach reached out to somebody else. And then all of a sudden I'm like on a team doing something else. Nice. But yeah.
So what is one of the things that pops up a lot in here? Networking is really important.
Yeah. Yeah. It's huge. It really, really is.
And you kind of yada yada your Jamaican team. You know, what was your experience with that?
Yeah, the Jamaican team was amazing. I played when I was younger, and I also played against them when I was on the U.S. national team when I was younger. But as I got older, I knew that my family's mainly Jamaican and British, and I want to play for Jamaica because I feel like that just felt more meaningful for me. So when I, one of the coaches at the time, he, again, a lot of connections, a lot of little things. He was the head coach of a team in Orlando and we played against his team so many times. We've beaten, we've lost. It's just, they were one of our rivals growing up. So he already knew who I was as a player. So when I mentioned, I think my father mentioned to him that I wanted to change over and play for the Jamaican team. He ended up being the head coach for the Jamaican team like a year or two after. He called me up while I was at college and stuff like that. So played with them for a couple of qualifying games. I couldn't go to the last one because like I mentioned, I tore my Achilles. So that last one I couldn't go to. And that's also part of the reason why I worked so hard to get back into playing after my Achilles, because that summer it was the World Cup. So I went to South Africa with the team, played with them there. I unfortunately couldn't play in the actual World Cup because of the Achilles. I wasn't cleared to play, but again, even doing the qualifying match, even doing all of those things and training with the team was more than enough, experience and meeting such lovely people. So very, very grateful for that.
That's awesome. And so going back to grad school, you're doing your labs, mm-hmm. you're doing this stuff. And then I guess you graduate. Do you decide to come back to Connecticut or?
Yeah, so that was around when COVID started. So there was a lot of things shutting down. I couldn't go in lab anymore. And I was applying to PhD programs. But I also reached back out to my old lab head at Pfizer when I did the internship. And I was just wondering if there was any jobs. I don't know, maybe mm-hmm. something pops up. Because I knew from that experience, I wanted to come back to Pfizer or go into pharmaceuticals in general. So he mentioned there's a couple open positions, you know, if you apply, just let me know. And I applied for that. And I also applied for PhD programs. And even though I did get into PhD programs, especially over in the UK, and I was thinking about staying so I could play a bit more, I knew that I missed a lot of my family, my mom, my brother, and being closer to them meant a lot, especially during that such a hard time for everybody. I fortunately got the job at Pfizer and just moved back over, cold state of Connecticut. Yeah. but you know, it was still a part of home to me because I went to school here. So I still knew the area. I still had a lot of friends here. I still had, you know, things that I knew that I could do around here. And again, a couple of connections of getting me to CT Rush to play and, coach there and get to know the team. It still connected me to soccer, even though I chose to not play professionally anymore. I knew I wanted to do something. So I was like, okay, if I work at Pfizer, that's amazing. I had my goal of being professional. I did that. So now maybe this is the time for me to make my goal of being a professional chemist to some extent. So you know, didn't want to lose the soccer side. So, you know, that's where the coaching bit comes in. But this is, you know, I'm on the path of, you know, getting to that other goal that I also set for myself when I was younger. So that kind of, I think, geared me to making that big decision of coming back over.
Yeah. And when it comes to being like a scientist and a chemist, you know, I think it's kind of a foggy world for most people. They don't know, like, how do you become a scientist? How do you become a chemist?
You're like, what does that mean?
What does that mean?
Chemistry. I love chemistry. I'm a big person that does puzzles. I like jigsaw, like any kind of crossword, something that you can solve, basically. And chemistry is an interesting thing where you're presented, you know, a structure that you have to figure out how to make. You know, a lot of these things are very, very new and, you know, first in class is what we call it. So it was one of those things where, like, this is something I can be very creative, and it's very difficult. It's not for everybody. You definitely have to have the mentality of being very persistent, because 99% of the time your reactions don't work. And that's a very stressful, very hard thing to kind of just like ingest every day. But when you think about the big picture of like, okay, if this thing actually works and, you know, goes through the clinicals and becomes a drug in a couple of years, that's amazing. Like, that's going to affect a lot of people. So again, that, you know, end goal, that outcome is what I usually gets me out through the day, honestly, that's my day to day. But thinking about, you know, becoming a chemist, becoming a scientist, you know, scientist is a very broad thing, because you could be a scientist in like a lot of different things. But being a chemist in general, it's, you know, like I mentioned, it is difficult, but I always think it's very fun, because like I mentioned, I'm a puzzle person. I like to solve problems. I like to, you know, try to talk and figure it out as best as I can. And like I said, my chemistry teacher in high school is what brought me here. She made chemistry so, so fun. She connected it to our daily thing. She said it, you know, you like cooking? It's basically cooking to some extent. So thinking about how joyous she was, I was like, okay, maybe I can actually do that. So having that from there, moving into college, doing it all 4 years, trying to get connections there, and now doing it at Pfizer, it's like, it's amazing. I love my job. I kind of make my own schedule to some extent where, you know, I still have to watch my games and Premier League and all that good stuff, Champions League. So, you know, I plan my meetings and I'm in lab for the most part. So I am on my feet. I work with my hands. You know, your typical, if people think about like chemistry, you're in your lab coat, you have your goggles, you have your gloves, all of those kinds of things. But it is a great community, and great, great people that I work with. So very happy to be there.
And is it still something you're thinking about for PhD?
I am. It still trickles in the back of my mind, but it's interesting because I have this battle between, you know, staying where I am and kind of just learning through experience versus a PhD. I think there's very big benefits to both. But currently I've been learning so much over the past 3-4 years that I've been with the company, just, you know, being moved to different projects, working on different things and working with different people, where like you don't get that as often with a PhD, where you're very highly focused on one thing. So I've been enjoying this so far. I always say that, like, you know, I'm probably at the point where I might not go back. But again, like, I always strive to be the best that I can be. So if I, you know, next year in a couple of months, I feel like it's probably the best thing for me, that can kind of move me up a little bit faster or get to where I want to be, then I'll go for it. But currently I'm very happy of, you know, learning from all of just in action on the job kind of thing. So it's been nice.
Nice. I mean, like you said, people think scientists, they don't really have an idea. So it's nice to kind of idea. Well, what, you know, what the hell's a scientist do? What are you
doing? The typical, like, it's very much like you expect of like a little beaker, you know, sometimes you have a little color change. you're basically mixing together to try to make something else. It's, trust me, it's very, very complicated, but on a grand scheme of things, it's very simple.
And you started working during COVID, you said?
Yep. So right in 2020, I believe is when did I graduate? Oh goodness. So I started working at like middle to end of 2020. So right in the midst of COVID, basically. So that was a very challenging time, because As I mentioned, I'm in lab for the most part. So I'm in person. I go in office all the time. So it was a lot of restrictions when it comes to how many people who's qualified to be on site. So we're not risking anything. 6 feet apart, which is also difficult because I work right next to somebody. Like our lab hoods are right next to each other, but I had to be moved on the other side. There's a lot of safety reasons why, because I can't be in lab by myself just in case something happens, someone has to be there. But 6 feet apart, like there was a lot. it was very, very difficult and a very stressful time for many reasons. But
I mean, it's already a very restrictive job. Like you have very set rules that I need to do this a certain way, and any additional variables just complicate things to maximize.
Complicates it completely. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So it was stress already packed on more stress than it was there already. So it was definitely an interesting time. Thankfully, we're in a lot better time now. But yeah, like it's interesting because I also can compare it to when I was an intern, where there was, you know, bustling of people all over the place. It was very lively. You know, we had events, we had interviews, we had a bunch of stuff going on. Whereas when I started actually on the job, it was silent. There was like six people in my little area. So yeah, it was definitely an interesting situation, but again, grateful to be able to start and have an impact on like that whole pandemic. So.
Yep. What kind of things were you working on? Was it any of it COVID-related, or was there other things that you were working on?
Yeah, so I didn't work on, like, because at that point, so a lot of the times it's kind of hard to explain, but the drug process is very long. So it usually takes like 5 to 10 years for anything to come out. So for Pfizer to be able to get that out super, super quickly was a lot. Like, it was very, very hard to do. A lot of people had to be involved. So I was involved to like some extent when it came to more like the analytical side of things. But like it was already moving through the process where I am. So the things that I usually work on, like what I'm working on now, is very early stage. So we make very small amounts of compounds and things like that to be tested and like on rats and things like that. So it's very more so small scale. And then when things come back, data comes back very good, then it can go larger scale and it goes into the clinic, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of different places in hand. So that's why I said there's a lot of people involved. But I'm more on like the early stage of trying to discover stuff. So it's a bit harder because like I said, a lot of the times it's new space and you're kind of, you know, piecing things together to make it make sense. But yeah, it was interesting because the people around me, since they were working there before, were highly involved with it. So I was just watching them and seeing what's going on and seeing how the process goes. But yeah.
Nice. And so now you're doing that and you're also coaching, you know, and what impact has coaching had on your life?
Oh, coaching has been amazing. Like I was first starting coaching in Florida with like a U11 team of the old club team that I used to play for. And I was just in and out. I was more doing training because me growing up training with my dad was my coach for when I was younger until I moved to the girls team. And he trained my brother and I throughout our entire life, basically. So being a coach at first, I was like, okay, let me just do training and kind of get to know the girls and see how the club team is, et cetera, et cetera. And then, you know, someone reached out and was like, why don't you coach the team? Like, I feel like you would be really good at this. I was like, okay, I'll try it out. I did older girls just because, again, you know, I just came out of playing professionally. I can get to give some advice to that aspect. But what drew me to be more so a coach for like the younger girls was, you know, I was so, so excited to go to practice when I was younger. I loved going to practice. Of course, you get to hang out with your friends and things like that. But just learning something new, trying, you know, new skills at practice. I was a defender. So I was like, maybe I could score today. Things like that, that, you know, you don't usually do. I was like, okay, my brother taught me this. How can I bring this into my game? Things like that. I wanted to be able to provide that excitement for girls that when I was that young, like that age. So doing it like with your daughter and the team that I have now has been so, so rewarding and super fun. Cause my biggest thing as a coach is, you know, skill can always be taught. You can learn that. You're going to learn that throughout your entire soccer career, basically. But, you know, the love for the game is a very hard thing to achieve. So, you know, I'm going to be a hard coach. I'm going to make sure, you know, they're learning and I'm teaching them things, but I also want them to love it. I want them to enjoy practice and the games. It's not necessarily about winning and losing. Everybody loves winning, but as long as they understand the game, as long as they, you know, think they played well that day and they know why, like, things went wrong, et cetera, that's going to go a long way. And especially when they get older, that's going to play a big part in their soccer career. So that's been one of my favorite things, just to see how the development goes.
Yeah. No, and it's been great. I mean, from a parent side of point of view, like, when it's funny because when I had Eva come there, she had only been playing like a year of soccer at that point when she tried out for you guys, like a little over a year. And I kind of did it because some of the other girls were doing it and they were like, oh, yeah. Come. And I'm like, and I just kept telling her, you might not make it. So just accept that you might not make it, but I think it'd be good to practice going to tryouts. You know, just like another learning experience.
She was so nervous.
Yeah. And she's just like, okay. And she just went and she just played. And then, you know, then we got the letter in and I was like, Anita, I don't think we can buy a car right now because we're going to have to play soccer. You know? So we're going to have to hold off a bit on buying a new car. We got a new bill that we're going to do. And we've been with you for like half a year, a little over half a year, and the progress has been tremendous. Like, even when we go back to rec, you know, to town soccer, the other coaches who have seen you are like, oh my God, she went from barely able to move forward to like just controlling stuff. And I'm just like, yeah, and I still think she has stuff to improve on. So, but it's just amazing. So, you know, I really appreciate all the work you put into it, and I see firsthand experience, you know, how much she's grown from it, and like even just her head swivel, just like being on the field where she can know, oh, I got to come.
She's moving. Yeah.
I'm like, oh, look at her.
So, yeah. I appreciate that.
Usually around, you know, near the end when we start talking, you know, I always like to come back and ask, you know, if you could go back and talk to a younger version of yourself, what's something you'd tell yourself? What advice would you give yourself?
Ooh, that's such a good question. I think, you know, as persistent as like I claim to be, or I hope to be, I think still, like, I would love to tell myself to keep going and keep pushing. There is going to be a difficult path. Like, I went through a lot of stuff. I lost my father in the midst of college time. There's just a lot of things that are going to happen, but you have to keep going. There's always, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel kind of thing. And like, you know, life is going to be hard. And most of the time, as much as you can plan, it's probably not going to go the way you think it's going to go. But it's going to go the way it's supposed to. So, it's hard, but you got to keep pushing. You just got to keep going. I tell myself that today. I want to tell myself that before. And, you know, hopefully in the future, keep telling myself that. So, yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. And I love the way you said it. It's not going to go the way you expect, but it's going to go the way it's supposed to. You know, that's me and my wife kind of do that all the time. Like, you know, if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. Let's just leave it in God's hand and keep moving forward, you know. So it's
exactly,
you know. And so then, and ultimately, you know how do you say success in Spanglish?
Ooh, that's a good one too. That's such a good question. I think it's just a matter of, like I mentioned before, success to me is just making my parents proud, making my family proud, and honestly making myself proud. Thinking about how much I've gone through and what my little self planned to be. And I was able to at least accomplish it, not necessarily in the way, like you said, like not in the way that I saw it, not nearly the way I saw it. I didn't think I was going to go, you know, to Yale specifically. I didn't know I was going to do Pfizer and all that stuff, but you know, I'm making myself proud and making my family proud, especially my parents and my older brother. Like that's success to me. Like I did it. that's all I wanted to do. And hopefully I can get there. So, yeah.
Nice. And I guess my last question is, what is your real opinion of Harvard? So
they're fine, I guess. No, I have some friends that went to Harvard too. They're fine, but you know, Bulldogs is really like the way to go.
I went to Boston University, so I have a lot of friends from Harvard as well. So I always know, oh, it's Harvard Yale. It's Harvard Yale. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it's funny because it's like, oh, it's the rivalry. But like personally, we always like are fine. Everyone's friends. We're all good. Nice. But no, it's all about Yale. It's all about the Bulldogs. I'm through and through. Yaley till I die. So. blue and white only.
Nice. Awesome. Well, Brittany, thank you so much for taking the time and sharing your story. You know, you've gone through so much, and you're a great motivation to, you know, the girls on your field. And so I really appreciate you taking the time to come out here and talk to me. So thank you so much.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Thank you for having me. This was great. I love this.
Okay, awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. And obviously for everyone else listening, thank you so much for tuning in. As always, I hope you'll join me again next time as we continue to learn how to say success in Spanish.